The following is a production of BYU Broadcasting in cooperation with the Brigham Young University Division of Continuing Education.
Call me provincial. I can take it. Here's why I might be just a bit provincial. If you say song recital, the first thing that comes to my mind is the usual conventional program, a chronological promenade through various periods and styles, beginning with heavy representation of songs from Italy by way of Central Europe, German or Austria, primarily. Can't leave out something from that prolific wunderkind Franz Schubert. And our survey usually dumps us off somewhere in France with an impressionistic piece. Okay, maybe I don't get to enough recitals, but that's the way I generally remember them. Italy, Austria, Germany, then France. Does anybody ever cross the Pyrenees to Iberia?
Luce la fe por el triunfo.
Our guest on today's Thinking Aloud can expand the experience of people like me, people who routinely expect what we expect and convene for the conventional. I'm excited by the prospect of a fresh program, and I think you will be too, after hearing from our guest Arden Hopkin, who appears in recital this Friday evening at BYU, with nary a note from Schubert or Brahms. We'll begin in Spain, and if we go anywhere from there, it will be west, not east, on today's Thinking Aloud. J. Arden Hopkin is an educator and singer. Currently, he is the head of vocal studies at Brigham Young University, teaches studio voice and vocal pedagogy in the School of Music. Arden Hopkin received his education from BYU and the University of North Texas, with degrees in vocal performance and in performance and literature from the Eastman School of Music. Hopkin specializes in the vocal music of Spain and Latin America. Among his publications, an article, Vowel Equalization in the Journal of Singing, and an anthology titled The Art Song in Latin America, a collaborative work of 20th century songs from South and Central America. He's also the author of a reference book, Songs for Young Singers, an annotated list of songs for developing voices, released by Scarecrow Press in 2002. Arden Hopkin, great pleasure to have you on Thinking Aloud today.
It's a pleasure to be here with you. Thank you.
Very exciting program, I must say, and I have the full program in my hand. And one of the things I have to say about vocal programs in general is that they can be replete with lots and lots of songs. 25 songs, it's not unheard of to really lay it on that way. And I'm grateful for that. Give us a little bit of background for this particular program, how you've set this up. Is it a promenade through time?
It is not, actually. It's a snapshot of different eras of Spanish music. Spanish music, vocal music, is at least 400 years old. And so there are representations of the songs that were written back just right the turn of the 1500s into the 1600s. There are songs from the 18th century, popular songs from the street. There are theater songs. There are songs for voice and guitar. There's a great deal of variety.
Now, I started out with a little bit of a caricature about what the typical art song recital can be like, but I often get the sense that the real high art of Europe, it was the material suited for the courts, for the nobility, for the aristocracy, for the kings. And so is there overall a little bit more earthier, a little bit more grassroots sort of tradition to song in Spain?
There was a monarchy in Spain for a long time, and so some of the music is courtly. But mostly it's people music, people of the street. One of the sets on the program surround popular dances of the period, zapateado, bolero, apolo. All of those are typical folk dances of the period.
It's just, again, this has to do with my own provincial ways. And I think of sort of art song as being in the domain of people who are maybe not so much like us.
The truth be born that art song was music for the salon. This was art song that people would use to entertain themselves before there was television and internet. They had the newly invented pianoforte, and they had that in their living room, and so they entertained themselves in the evening by playing the piano or the spinet and singing tunes. And there were lots and lots of songs written and published for that kind of a market. So this is really very much music of the people. It's people 200 years ago, And so their tastes were different than our own, but it was still music that was meant to meet the needs of the common person.
Is there really still a lingering appeal for the songs of someone from back in the times of the troubadours? I would imagine that there are existing melodies that can be traced way back.
There are some. I think of one song in my mind right now that I'm not including on the program that's had a lifespan of 400 years, and it keeps reoccurring again and again in new arrangements. That happens in our own language, in our own country as well. Songs from the Shakespearean times get new arrangements and reappear. And so, yeah, there is a long-standing appeal. I just point out that if you go to a movie and you see something courtly on the screen, and the music doesn't match that era, then it seems like something's wrong. And so sometimes without the image on the screen, you hear the music and it can awaken in you those same sensations of refinement and antiquity. And it's a wonderful little trip that a person can take sitting in a seat in a recital where they can travel around the world in 80 minutes, you know, so to speak. They can really go from era to era and celebrate, feel the way those people felt.
Now, we are very guilty in the United States of sometimes talking about Hispanic peoples or Spanish-speaking peoples and just in a very broad brush, lumping them together as one category. Your program, how far does it range? Are we talking about Catalan songs? Are we talking about various regions within Spain that are unique? And then do we branch out to the Americas?
Spain, like many of the countries in Europe, really wasn't a country for a long time. Not until 1492 was it really unified and the Moorish people were cast out, or the Moorish leaders. But the provincialisms of the several regions in Spain, five or six or seven regions, marked themselves by culture, by food, by linguistics differences. The people of Catalan in the region of Barcelona speak a separate language. Of course, they speak Spanish, but they also speak Catalan, a language that I don't know. But there are regionalisms all the way through. Frankly, when I was preparing this recital, one of the songs had texts, old Spanish texts that I couldn't decode. And so I had to send it to a friend of mine who was in Spain, and she wrote back. She said, oh, that's just dialectics. What they really mean to say is this. Boy, I couldn't have gotten that from the text, but that region knew how to decode those words.
I wanted to talk about two issues. I want to get into the program and sample some of what we're going to be hearing, and so we'll do that in just a moment. But first, what about the charge that you look very Anglo to me? You don't look particularly like you might either come from Spain or from Latin America. And the authenticity question about how can you present this and sing this and make it legitimate?
That's a really good question, and I've actually had it posed to me by other North Americans who look at me and say, well, what right do you have to sing that music? And my response to that is, why not? If I celebrate a culture, if I want to understand the culture, the best way to do that is to try to dig into its literature and its music. And so I do it. And I'm met with sometimes curiosity by my own countrymen. But then I go to other countries and I perform these concerts, and the people come up and say, wow, it was so nice to have this foreigner singing our own music for us. We're usually inundated by the music of other countries, and it was great to hear our own music performed. Well, frankly, we didn't even know that some of those songs were our songs. They like us, are enamored of other cultures that they look at, and they think that their own culture isn't very high.
Yeah, exoticism goes both ways.
It really does, and so they look at us, and they're interested in our culture, but when I go there and sing their songs, they think, my goodness, I didn't even know the name of that composer, and that was a great song. So, you know, it's a little bit of a missionary work, if you will.
Let's listen to a piece here and have you tell us, set it up for us, if you would. The title is Claros y Frescos Ríos, and with just a little bit of Spanish that I barely can decipher myself, that has to do with a river or rivers, streams?
It does, and actually there are several strophes that talk about the different parts of nature, and would they all lament with him because he's lost his true love. And so it's, you know, it's the same kind of song that we hear nowadays with a different kind of context where unrequited love is expressed in song. It was written in a period of time when troubadours were traveling through Spain. is before Spain was really truly a united country. And these troubadours wrote their own music. They published it in tablature form. It was written for an instrument like the guitar called the vihuela. In our program, we're actually going to use a guitar to do it. And here's an example of the kind of lament that was common in that period of time.
Claros y frescos ríos que mansamente vais siguiendo vuestro natural camino. Desiertos montes míos que en un estado estáis de soledad muy triste, muy continuo. Aves en quien hay tiene.
Guitarist there is
Lawrence Green, faculty member here at the School of Music, a wonderful friend and a fine, fine guitarist.
He'll be joining you in this recital on Friday evening, as well as pianist Larry Blackburn, I understand.
Also a very close colleague of mine, a wonderful organist who plays the piano very, very well.
When you sing a song like this, do you think about the time distance? Do you put yourself somehow mentally or emotionally into antiquity?
I do. I can tell a story of performing these songs in Puebla, Mexico. And I was in an old building that was built in the 1500s. And as I was singing the song, I had this sense, it was a courtyard, I had the sense that these walls had perhaps heard this song before. And, you know, then the songs fell out of common usage and haven't been brought back until the 20th century. But those walls heard that kind of music when they were very first built. And it gave me a shiver down my spine that some circle had been closed along the way.
Now, not to undermine what you've just said, but is that sort of just the mental gymnastics that we artists go through and like to experience? Is that sort of a concocted experience, or did you really feel?
No, I really felt that. And furthermore, part of the reason that I love to perform recitals is because I love to make the journey myself. I really, really like going other places, feeling other things, putting myself in the place of other individuals. And this is a way where I can do it. I guess somebody looking at me would say I'm just performing, but actually I'm trying to literally experience the different countries, the different eras, the different regions, the different moods, so that it becomes kind of like a sampler.
How connected are people in Spanish-speaking countries with these ancient songs? Is that remote past? I know that here, popular culture in the United States is such that we just sort of eradicate the past and march forward. And I'm wondering if there's maybe a little bit more of a conservative artistic appreciation of the ancient songs.
No, I don't think so. I think they're like us, that the vast majority of people are overwhelmed by popular culture. Popular culture imported from the United States, I have to say, most of the time. Scholars, academics, musicians, they still hold on to those traditions. But for the common person, it's a little bit like us hearing songs from Shakespearean time. Yeah, we've done it, but it's not really something we turn the radio on to and say, I'm looking for a Shakespearean song.
I asked that question to set you up, actually, and for this next question, which is, are you something of a preservationist then?
No, I don't think so. I'm an explorer. Maybe I'm a preservationist, but I'm just preserving things while I'm exploring them. For me, it's the journey, and the song is the byproduct. Mm-hmm. It's a means by where I can make that trip. And as I've learned these songs, I've been taken places that I don't get to go every single day. I kind of enjoy it.
We've got a pair of excerpts here from your program that we're going to listen to that you've recorded in advance of the recital. And first I'd like to go to a Zapateado, which is, we do not know the name of the composer. This goes way back. And then we're going to follow that up with something by Granados. I'd like you to tell us about this Zapateado. What is that exactly?
The Zapateado is a dance. And in the 1800s and 1900s in Spain, the common people loved to dance. And they had certain folk dances that they did, and composers wrote songs, you know, like doing it. It's when, you know, the sock hop in the 1950s, everybody danced, but they were to songs, right? So same sort of notion. And this is one of four songs on the program that come from that era of popular music in Spain. Composers have been lost, the names of the composers, the music survived, and has been republished, and I found them and like them.
And so here you are singing a zapateado with piano?
Yes.
El gitano y la gitana tuvieron en que entender. La gitana decía, lo acabas de conocer, que el muchacho es muy bueno y trabaja muy bien. Y donde tú machacas, él machaca también. Ay, tirana, tiranilla, tirana mía, olé. Madrecita de mi vida, venga usted por Dios a ver que el muchacho es muy bueno y trabaja muy bien, sino que con las chispas que tú no los ves. Ay, 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 ay.
Is that something of a patter song?
Well, it is, and in that same set there are a couple of more that are just as pattery.
And a patter song is just simply
lots of words. Just tells a fun story about some gypsies and being depreciated by other people when they're sort of selling themselves as being of greater value than people think they are.
Now, the dance, you say the zapateado, it has three beats.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds like a very fast polka or something almost.
It almost does, doesn't it?
Is that a requirement for that particular dance? I think of like a habanera or a samba have distinct rhythms.
Yes, and the same thing's true for a zapateado.
Okay. Take us from that piece, if you will, to this Granados excerpt, an excerpt we're going to hear from a piece called El Majo Olvidado.
When Granados was writing it in early 1900s, he was harking back to an earlier era. We've all seen the pictures of Goya, and we've seen the pictures of majos and majas, these young men and women of Spain who are flirtatious, dressed elegantly, seem to be happy and joyful. And so Granados, in order to evoke that same period, set songs from that era and wrote new songs in the style, but gave it a 20th century twist. And so, basically, what he's doing is harking back to that period where the zapateado came from.
And when you say a 20th century twist, we're talking about a composer who died in 1916.
That's right.
And so he's just barely making it into the 20th century.
Still post-romantic, but the flavor in Spain is different than in the rest of Europe. There's a little flavor of other European impressionists, but it's very distinctively Iberian.
And this piece comes from a set of two pieces you performed two of the tonadillas?
Actually, he wrote 12 tonadillas escénicas, and the Majo Olvidado is one of those. The other one, Canción del Postillón, is the song of a postman who's hurrying to try to deliver a letter to a lover so that he can get some rest. And it's also from that very same style, but not from that set of tonadillas.
Pobre del majo olvidado que toro sufrir, 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 pues que la ingrata le deje no quiere.
Poor suffering suitor. He's just pining away there.
That's right. It's called the forgotten swain, or the majo olvidado. He's lamenting over the fact that she's forgotten him.
Yeah. Arden Hopkin is our guest today on Thinking Aloud, and we've invited him to join with us in advance of his Friday evening recital in the Madsen Recital Hall at the BYU School of Music. That will take place September 12th in the evening, 7:30, and the title of this recital is Spain in Song, a faculty artist recital from the School of Music. Are we in an age now where we can't... Do we have the same sorts of emotions in songs as this poor, suffering suitor from back in Spain way back when?
Yeah, I think we have the same kind of feelings. I think we express them in more mundane kinds of ways. There was something quite elegant about earlier eras where the flowing of words together to express deep and broad sentiments became very profound until such time as the authors then became so flowery that they lost their meaning. But there was an elegance in language, in all of the languages, that I really enjoy. That hasn't gone entirely away. There are still poets and writers today that do that, but you don't find those writers very often in popular culture.
Well, I guess my question is, you know, we live in a time when people no longer swoon. And along with that goes the idea that nobody wants to be over the top. When I hear a song like this, this poor suffering suitor, is that, you say elegant, but is it over the top?
I don't think so. I think it's profound. And, you know, I'll go back to the Beatles and Elvis Presley and say, sure, there are still people that swoon. They just swoon in a different kind of a way. You know, they still have those deep and abiding and intimate emotions that are profound. It's just that our vocabulary very frequently has degenerated to the point where we can't find words to express what we really feel. And in this period of time that was less hurried, people took more time to put in words their feelings, and composers, of course, are very careful to try to tap into those things, and they labor carefully over the juxtapositions of notes and rhythms to evoke those same kind of emotions. So, no, I don't think they're over the top at all.
Your program includes composers that I've heard names of, people like Joaquin Rodrigo, Francisco Tárrega, Fernando Sor, Isaac Albéniz, but also people I haven't heard anything about before. Javier Monsalvatge.
He's a Catalan composer. Composer of mixed race, and so as he set his music together, he was trying to celebrate the era of the Spanish-American War, and so he looked for Negro composers, African composers living in the New World, and set together a set of five songs.
The set is called Cinco Canciones Negras.
That's right, five black songs. And they're delightful and quite different in flavor from anything else that's on the program.
Is that just sort of an opener? You know, when you have an orchestral concert, you often start with an overture to just kind of grab attention. Is that kind of what the function is here of these songs?
Well, I program them there because they are irresistible. They sweep across five different emotions that are quick and delightful and pleasing to listen to, certainly pleasing to perform.
Tárrega, you're doing selections with guitar. Those would be guitar only in this concert as well.
There are. Larry Green is going to do a set of guitar pieces, and Tárrega is one of those. Sor is another. Albéniz is the other, who are going to appear about two-thirds of the way through the program.
As we conclude our conversation, let's talk about opera in Spain and what that tradition is. There's this term zarzuela.
The zarzuela is almost as old as European opera is. It harks back to the early stages of the 1600s and has had an intermittent life clear from that time, clear into the 20th century. It had a high point during the 1700s, and then it waned as Italian opera sort of swept over the whole world. And then it made a resurgence in 1850 up into the 1900s. I'm going to be doing some selections from Luisa Fernanda, which is undoubtedly the most popular of the zarzuelas from the 20th century. It actually is a very interesting contemporary setting, talking about the Spanish Civil War.
Does a zarzuela have the feel of grand opera? Is it a little bit smaller in scale? How does it compare?
It has a variety. It can range as great and grand as the highest grand operas, but it can be somewhat of a musical theater piece as well. One of the things that distinguishes the zarzuela is that it has spoken dialogue in it, intermingled with music, and Luisa Fernanda is like that. It also has spoken Spanish dialogue.
Well, when people think about Spain and opera in the same sentence, same breath, it's always Carmen, which wasn't even by a Spanish composer. Is there any representation of Italian opera that made it into the popular realm or into the hearts of the people of Spain?
Oh, yes. The opera by Verdi, Don Carlo, was set in Spain. And so the Spanish history is very colorful. It's kind of bloody. It's kind of exotic. And it's deeply passionate. The Iberian people are very emotional people, and they wear their emotions on their sleeve a lot, and that leads to exaggerated kind of storytelling. And that's the subject of opera, without doubt.
One last excerpt for today's conversation. Ay, mi morena, by Toroba. And let's listen to it and talk about it.
En una dehesa del Extremadura tengo una casina blanquina y chicuca. Parece un palacio mi pobre casina. Fui cuando una moza como un infantino. Me llena de gozo saber que la moza me aguarda y me espera contando las horas. Pensar que la tratan igual que una reina y ser en mis prados el rey que la espera.
So, in the realm of opera, has this kind of opera made it into the European pantheon of great operas, or is the Zarzuela not afforded the same stature as other operas?
In the Spanish-speaking world, it has the same stature. When I was a missionary in Lima, Peru, I saw my first Zarzuela, and it was a European import. And it sort of captured my fancy. And so it's one of those avenues of Spanish music that has interested me. Placido Domingo's got his career started singing zarzuela on a touring company with his parents, going from Spain into Latin America and performing. And so, yeah, the zarzuela is a very popular art form in the Spanish-speaking world.
This sort of gets me into our last little chunk here of biography. You go way back with this kind of material. If you were a missionary in Peru watching a zarzuela, is that when you got the bug for Spanish music?
It was. I really was. I was infected, afflicted. It's been with me ever since.
Poor
then.
Suffering swain.
My heart somehow was transformed when I was there. Of course, I was there for another purpose, and that was to share a message. But along the way, I came away from that experience deeply enriched by my experiences in Latin America. And the Latin American people looked to Spain the way we looked to Northern Europe. And so I fell in love with Spain and its culture from that era forward.
It's a great program you have lined up, and I'd like to thank you for your time here. And good luck, and enjoy the recital this Friday.
My pleasure, and thank you for inviting me.
Arden Hopkin, our guest on Thinking Aloud today. J. Arden Hopkin does perform Friday evening in the Madsen Recital Hall at BYU at 7:30 in the evening. Attend it if you can. A great lineup of beautiful music from Spain. We hope you come to our website and hear this interview again or any of our past interviews. You can come to us at classical89.org/thinkingaloud. We always welcome your comments at our email address, thinkingaloud@byu.edu. On our production team, the following individuals: Wes Sims and Koyo Iyamba and BYU students Anna Staker and Brent Rowland. Our theme music is by BYU graduate student Nicholas Greer. We hope you listen for us on air every weekday at 11 a.m. Mountain Time, with the exception of Tuesdays, when we typically bring you a BYU devotional or forum broadcast. We have rebroadcasts evenings at 8. I'm Marcus Smith, and this has been Thinking Aloud.
Thinking Aloud is a production of BYU Broadcasting, made possible in cooperation with the Brigham Young University Division of Continuing Education.